Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, the immaculate.
Now listen to this.
Let's see. Gremlins 1, Mark Nunn. Wow. Well, if it comes on, it'll be news to you and news to me. Welcome to Soma Time. I'm your host, Dr. Mark, and everything that could go wrong in a single day is happening. So I don't even know why the switchboard is doing this thing. I don't know. I'm looking at it. It's twirling around. You know, I've done the show for 3 years. I think I've opened the show with Professor Val or myself. You know, we do one show a week, so that's 150 or so of these suckers. And maybe we've opened the show successfully 3 times. I'm just amazed that this thing is hanging up. I'm not really not amazed. It happens every week. So let's see if we can get a little music here in a second. I don't know. It's doing its thing. Oh, look, thank you for joining us. So if you had a day like me and a night like mine and you're looking to get a song to just sort of sum it all up, I'm going to hit the play button here and we'll see what happens. As it does its little dance. Why does it always come out so damn tinny? Let's try it a little softer. A little softer now. In the show, 646-478-4847. That's 646-478-4847. Big show tonight because we have a lot on the plate once again as we meet here on Hump Day. And boy, has it been a hump day. Have you had a hump day? I have. So anyway, a lot of stuff I want to get to tonight. But first, I want a little format change. We're going to try. I mean, I don't know why. We're going to try and organize this dopey show. So that when you listen back to it, you kind of know the segments and you kind of know what's coming. And that way, you know, if you're listening to this on the archive, which 99% of you guys do, because that's the nature of the beast here on Blog Talk, you can just say, okay, he's doing the Soma News here, he's doing this there, and, you know, you kind of chop things up a little bit so that we start to have a little more organization with this rambling once a week. And in case you're listening for the first half a dozen times and you haven't heard me say this before, this show is my sort of weekly rant on all things that would cause social stress to the populace. And, you know, my job is a stress strategist, newly titled, is to help people be able to shed a lot of this noise that washes up on their nerve endings. So, you know, if you go to my website, which is somaspace.org, a lot of toys and whistles there on the homepage now as we continue to decorate the sky with intentionally, you know, powerful stuff. So you can see the link on there for the What's on Your Nerves, which is sort of a way to kind of just get introduced to each other here, and you can tell me what's been bugging you. I kind of know, but, you know, we give you an opportunity to kind of give us some contextualized feedback so that maybe get you on the air. Did amble into the chat room before the show on somerspace.org and didn't see too many questions tonight worth sharing because I got in a little late. And I've been watching the Olympic hockey almost all afternoon, actually. So I've been got one eye on that. I've had I went to a teleclass today that I'll share with you a little bit on brain plasticity. Cool stuff there. So there's a lot of, like I said, there's so much that is just like you just want to sit down and have like a long train ride and soak all this in. So, you know, I always recommend these kinds of shows because they are kind of long. We go a little over an hour every week, sometimes a little longer than that. You know, you're going to commute. You're going to get in the car this weekend. You may out shoveling snow, you know, next couple of days here in the Northeast. So, you know, you pop this thing into your iTunes. You download it off the site as an MP3. You pop it into your player, and you could just listen to me wherever you are. I will go. My voice will follow you, as someone famous once said. So we have to start, I hate to say it, at 9:06, but it's time for our friend the swine flu. Cue the music.
Son of a bitch, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, gun. You thought I was going to say son of a bitch, didn't you?
That's right, it's back. Took a little vacation over the holidays, and here it is, fresh off the Yahoo News. WHO says it's too early to declare the swine flu peak over. These bastards. I'm sorry, it's time for Batman.
You filthy criminals.
That's right. We'll stop at nothing. The propaganda continues. Here we are, Geneva. It's too early to say that the swine flu pandemic has peaked in all parts of the world, according to WHO's emergency committee. The committee advised that it was premature to conclude that all parts of the world have experienced peak transmission of the H1N1 pandemic influenza. Gregory Hartle said the decision of 15 experts was not binding, and a final decision would be taken by Secretary Margaret Chan. But the committee felt the more time and information was needed to give an informed opinion on the state of the pandemic. We were at a level 6 pandemic for about a year with this dopey thing. It did nothing. Their conclusions will be said in more detail in a press conference Wednesday, because now there's an investigation going on, by the way. And that doesn't even get into the half of it, what's going on with the vaccines that they put out there that were on the shelf, and now people are chucking them in the river everywhere. They're not even getting them back. I'll get into that a little bit. Let's see. The 15-member emergency committee headed by Australian infectious disease expert John McKenzie has been following signs over the past months that H1N1 was tailing off in most parts of the world. We were hoping the worst was behind us. Several countries have been running down their costly special pandemic flu precautions. Under fire, WHO wins praise from the flu scientists. Most recently, the Czech health authorities canceled around a third of their order for 1 million vaccines, published by our friends at GlaxoSmithKline. New recommendations issued by WHO for later this year incorporate H1N1 into seasonal vaccines. 16,000 people die worldwide from this scourge, spread into 212 countries, overseas. It's uncovered in Mexico in April 2009, and the United States, over there in Wisconsin, pig farms. So there you go. Overall, swine flu has been declining in the Northern Hemisphere. This is amazing. If confirmed, so to revise the recommendations made to its 193 member states on precautions such as vaccines to help governments adapt to the new phase. So there you have it. H1N1, H1N1, healthy macro. And, you know, like I said, they've been having trouble. Let's see if I can scoot around and find that quickly. They've been having trouble getting back all the vaccines that they put out there. Now they got orders coming in, and they spent so much money trying to scare us that at this point, now they're trying to re-scare us with the same monster. And what is it, 16,000 people worldwide? And that's about right for seasonal flu, right? We heard numbers from 12 to 30. H1N1. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Let's see if I can find a little thing here. I was looking up a whole bunch of stuff before the shoe. Trying to prepare for you guys every week, and it's not easy. It's not easy preparing for nothing. Again, the number is 646-478-4847. you can hop on here and give me your swine flu experience. If you're still afraid of this bug from nowhere. Let's see if I can find anything to do with that. You have any?
No.
No. Mañana. Okay. Yeah, we got another snowstorm here coming in the East Coast, so everybody's hunkered down. It's too warm for a snowstorm. So let's see. Saw something about that. I don't know if I'm going to find it here. It's because they have to get them back, see? That's the big part, is they're not getting them back. And these things have shelf life issues and all kinds of problems, so it's going to become more and more of an issue of what happened to all the vaccines that didn't get distributed, and what are they going to do with that? Swine flu vaccine free at 6 events in Snohomish County. There you go. Illinois looks at swine flu reports, marketing used to push vaccine, fight swine flu fatigue. Swine flu fatigue. Now we have fatigue. Fighting swine flu fatigue with some clever marketing. Wow. This is amazing. That the market a pandemic. How manufactured is this? Wow. Well, anyway, I'll switch topics here because I know this is one of the things you guys would really love to hear about is the swine flu for half an hour. But for the most part, it's another one of those swings and misses. A swing and a miss. Struck him out from the allopaths. And like I said, there's an investigation going on into the preparation of the vaccine and a whole bunch of other things. So we're not exactly dealing with something that worked on any level. But yet, people are freaked out about it still, you know. Speaking of being freaked out, I got a couple things, items here to talk to you about as far as, let's just look at the state of healthcare tonight a little bit. And we're going to get into the topic at hand here right after I read this story. Because it's something that's near and dear to my heart. Business Week, okay, doctors' hours fall for a decade, adding to U.S. shortage. This is Bloomberg. Work hours for U.S. doctors dropped steadily for more than a decade, mirroring a decline in inflation-adjusted fees and worsening a nationwide physician shortage. Doctors' hours fell to an average of 51 in 2008 from 55 in 1996, after two decades of being almost unchanged. Gee, I wonder what happened. Managed care, maybe? According to the Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA. JAMA, the report showed the slide was linked to a fall-off in fees paid to the physicians. Holy mackerel, we get paid for this? The charges declined 25% after inflation from 95 to 206, according to the index measure of fees going to doctors. So there you go. There's your insurance companies putting the old hose to the doctors. And this is the MDs. This is not even wackos like me. This is your card-carrying, you know, vanilla MD. The U.S. is suffering a nationwide shortage of practitioners that has left some Americans without a primary care doctor and has caused hospital emergency rooms to be overcrowded. All right? Pressure mounts if the federal government is successful in extending medical insurance to another 31 million in the proposed law. So no one ever asked about the supply and demand of doctors, just about health care. Well, the doctors are saying, hell, you know, we're getting paid, you know, 25% less than we used to be getting paid. Of course, our, you know, all of our operating costs have gone up. You'd be hard-pressed to find a profession that has experienced a drop in hours over a decade. We concluded that doctors weren't seeing either the financial or non-financial rewards that made it worth working that last hour. Gee, do I know that one. Other professions, let's take a look at some other ones. Lawyers, engineers, and nurses, no drop. During the 30-week exam of the study, Steger said a change less than an hour a week over 10 years up or down would be the experience of most professions. And we're down how many hours? Like 4 hours a week? 51 hours a week is what the average physician works, huh? 51 hours, my butt. That's a slacker. The staggering number of doctors has already left parts of the United States with 16,787 too few physicians to meet a federally set medically appropriate ratio of one doctor for every 2,000 residents. Wow. Doctors and economists, how many sentences speaking like that? Doctors and economists have debated whether there is a shortfall or simply an uneven distribution, which we all in the city see. Okay, health insurance expansion. There was 97% of residents that have medical coverage, and like this is in Massachusetts, and patients are waiting longer to get an initial visit. Waiting time. The average waiting time to see a family medicine doctor in Boston, a city with 14 teaching hospitals, what, is 63 days? Wow. For an initial visit, the longest among 15 cities. 63 days? You're waiting 2 months? Holy mackerel. You guys, how do you guys do this? How do you people do this allopathic stuff? I have no idea. People wait in my office. They wait 5 minutes. They want to stab me. The study didn't have data on physicians' overall annual incomes. Average physician, $173,000 a year, compared to $481,000 for orthopedic surgeons. Oh, those guys are getting paid. U.S. Government Accountability Office, just the introduction of managed care. Oh, see, I called it. In the mid-90s, was linked to the decline. Yeah. Across the board, today's study used in the U.S. Census Bureau's track work hours of resident and non-resident doctors. Right. We're down 59 from, let's see, dropped 10% from 59 hours in 2008-96. Most non-resident doctors fell about 5 or 6%. Urban doctors, I guess I'd be considered an urban doctor, where fees were lowest, so too were hours. The study shows a decline in hours tracked similarly across age and sex, even though doctors have suggested that the graying of the profession and the high number of women were leading to fewer hours. Part-timers. Got some gray hairs myself. Those are the first stories, and that's the ones the patients gave me. The first stories I heard when I began the study. Maybe it'll be true that women doctors are working few hours because of families. That's kind of sexist. While doctors over 45, I'm not there yet, work fewer hours on average than those under 45, why do they pick it on the 45-year-olds? The 7.4% decline in the work week for young physicians was more than double than the decline for older ones. Let's say that again. The 7.4% decline in the work week for younger physicians was more than double than the older ones. So that means they're getting in and they're getting out. And that's the allopaths. Ah. Once again. Come on. Play it. Play it.
You filthy criminies.
Yeah. Okay. So then, like I said, starting to show off here. If you've got a situation where you have a pandemic, you have pressure to get access for more people to more of this allopathic situation. You've got a 63-day wait for an initial visit to a family doctor in Boston, and you want to pass this health care bill as is? It's a cluster F. An absolute, unmitigated cluster F. So there you go. And like I said, that, and since they can't scare the public with their swine fear anymore, the people are looking for other alternatives to get their needs met when it comes to healthcare. Now, the alternative stuff, I don't even want to go there, but, you know, what I'm getting at tonight, and this is chunking up way from where we've been here for the last 20 minutes, is that you personally are going to come to grips one way or the other, and we're going to get some stories that actually touch on this tonight. One way or the other, death will enter your life. I'll say it again. Death will enter your life. And so everyone out there, listening and not listening, has to come up with a strategy for death. Death of themselves, death of people that are connected to them, death in general. Right? We got wars going on. We got all death all around us. Every day. I don't care who you are. Every day, you will hear about someone dying somewhere if you're in the Western civilized world and you have ears. If you don't read it, someone will tell you. If someone doesn't tell you, you'll see it pass by you on the side of a bus. Okay? So if you can not separate death from life and just look at it as, you know, part of nature's cycle here for a second with me, then the next thing I'm going to say to you is going to make more sense. Okay? You see it all the time. You see it with careers. I mean, we have fun with it here on the air, but everyone is interested in their legacy, in how they're going to be remembered. That's different than your reputation. It's different than your morals and your character and all the things that people associate with being alive. Legacy, for the most part, is what's left after you're gone. What are you leaving behind for everybody, right? What did you do in the world that was meaningful and mattered to people and had an impact on people? For good or bad, it doesn't matter. Okay? That's why when you look at people iconoclastically and say, oh, what does this person represent to you? And you think about the money spent to preserve someone's image, to the presidents deal with this all the time. Okay? You know, one of the biggest things about, you know, the Clinton administration was that the last 2 years after the impeachment hearings, he was all about his legacy, all about his legacy. We're dealing with that right now with Cheney, you know, covering up his tracks for Bush. You know, all these issues about how I'm going to be remembered, how people are going to consider me, have become very important, because what you do in this world at this point, like we talk about all the time here on the show, is a TMZ moment. It's stuck digitally in the clouds. So, you know, as the patron saint of the Internet, Douglas Rushkoff, says a lot of times, that your activity in your life is going to be recorded more on search engines and Google in very clear ones and zeros than on your tombstone. More people are going to know about you from the Internet than they're going to know about you from what you do on the ground. And that's just you walking around. That's not people even trying to promote themselves on the Internet. So your legacy is alive. And it's not limited to you. It's just you got to start thinking about the word self and expand it to everyone you ever interacted with. I mean anyone. It used to be in the 80s, you had to take a sexual inventory, you know, because of the whole AIDS thing, and it was this one and that one and this one and that one. And now it's basically everyone you've ever interacted with can somehow influence your legacy. People come out of nowhere. Tiger Woods last Friday. Anyone watch that? Anyone watch that? Why is he out there? Why does he care? If you had that much money, just think about that. Forget about all the other stuff. If you had that much money, just that much money, all the other things he has in his life aside, why would you care what anyone thought about you? There are vicious, evil people with lots of money that we never hear from. We never hear from them for 2 seconds. They don't come out to a press conference. They don't drag their mother out. They don't hug all their friends. Why does he care? Because he's managing his legacy. He's there to repair the way we think of him. It's called impression management in the psychological world. But for the most part, we're doing it all the time. We are legacy lepers. We love our legacies. Oh, they're going to remember me. And that's what, you know, you see out there. Athletes are obsessed with it because they want to get in the Hall of Fame. And it's like they want to be considered, you know, on all these little lists and stuff. And it's obsessive. But this is the culture. Because like I said, TMZ is out there to shoot you down. They're not there to reward anybody. Okay? They will find dirt on anyone that's breathing. Except themselves, usually. And our job, as being part of the world culture, being part of the way that we interact with each other out here, is to recognize the patterns other people run on us. So it is, in a sense, kind of bumper cars. It is kind of a sense like, how do I deal with this? But legacy as a word, stop thinking about it as something that happens after you take your dirt nap. It's happening all the time. Your living legacy comes down to your sense of coherence. Your living legacy comes down to your sense of coherence, which is the clarity you bring to your relationships, the way you self-regulate, the way you manage your emotions, and the way you structure your life. Okay, those four things. And if you don't do those four things well, you will lose coherence, your legacy will suffer, and you will experience a little bit of stress. And maybe you'll listen to the show, and you'll start seeking answers from other people, which is a good thing, because that means that you're extending yourself beyond your horizon of what you've experienced. Because I always try and tell people, especially people that I work with that dealing with deep-seated, horrible memories, you know, is that your existence exceeds your experiences. And you don't get that until you stop. You have to stop. And STFU. Stop. And STFU. Oh, wow. What happens then? Oh, but a little creepy voice in your head starts going like a trip hammer, right? Telling you to do stuff. We are human beings that do a lot, and we're not very productive at it. And that's why we make tons of mistakes, and that's why this stuff never get stable. And that's why the more we rely on the external systems and rely on things outside of us, the less power we feel, the less influence we have over our lives, and the less choices we create for ourselves and others. And that's pretty much like, you know, I don't know. I'm not a genius about it. I got no book out. I got no, you know, there's nothing that says I know anything, right? I've just been dealing with people on a daily basis for about 19, 20 years doing this job, and I just know one thing is true over and over again, is that nobody likes to fail. Nobody likes to fail. And most of us have a very limited definition of success. And because of that, we're constantly on this treadmill of trying to get to this legacy moment, try to get to the point where we're thought well of and all that stuff. And it's this invisible audience that we carry around in this Greek chorus we carry around in our head to try to meet some mythical standard that we're going to be this great person. And like I said, meanwhile, the culture's going the exact other way on the moving sidewalk, picking up dirt everywhere you go, tracking you all over the place. Who knows when it'll come out? Maybe you'll be the governor of New York, and then some hooker will, you know, decide, hey, it's time to spill the beans, and then she'll get a column in the Post. You know, well, our current governor of New York, of course, is accused of many things. You know, I mentioned Tiger. They're every day they're tearing somebody down, every single day. Everyone's got an agenda, and there's no secrets. So how do you function with this legacy thing? Well, looking at it from my Soma lens, see if I have anything here that can pass for a lens. I don't think that'll work. No. Yeah, this will pass. Mellowing out here.
Have you ever transcended space and time?
Time, not space. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, so again, if you're looking at the legacy from the standpoint of the way the soma's built, is our first stop is always going to be philo, somatic, all right? And that means we're going to go by our legacy through the people that we're related to, our family. Your family legacy that you carry with you has a lot of noise in it, whether you go from your ethnic origin, whether you go from racial, whether you go from religious, whether you go from political, whether you go from socioeconomic, whether you go from what part of the country you're from, all that crap gets in your head and gets shoved into what you form into an identity that you have to defend. You're defending a bunch of ghosts. You owe your ancestors nada. Yet, 68% of you wired into this thing developmentally, and you wave that stupid flag as you think it's going to matter. Now, I'm not going to get down on family pride. In fact, I got a story in a minute that's going to make you cry about it. But for the most part, our problem with it is that we don't understand when to stop. Because it's so natural for us to defend the people that are related to us. It's biology 101. We want to do it. But how do we get to the point where we can manage it? How do we get to the point where we can understand the limits to it, where it becomes content sensitive? You know, I got two clients calling in during the show so far. You should call the show. You get a hold of me over here. But nobody reads an email. That would be too hard to do. All right, let's see. Let's take a Lunesta break.
Lunesta helps you fall asleep quickly, so take it right before bed. Be sure you have at least 8 hours to devote to sleep before becoming active. Until you know how you'll react to Lunesta, you should not drive or operate machinery. Do not take Lunesta with alcohol. Call your doctor right away if after taking Lunesta you walk, drive, eat, or engage in other activities while asleep. In rare cases, severe allergic reactions can occur. Most sleep medicines carry some risk of dependency. Side effects may include unpleasant taste, headache, drowsiness, and dizziness. Why wait another night? Ask your doctor how a Lunesta night's sleep can help you wake this refreshed. Lunesta, a great tomorrow starts tonight.
The great folks of Lunestra, what a drug. I don't know. I figured I'd throw that in there since you guys are all on meds. You know that one pretty well. All right, let me switch gears here and get into some of these stories that are coming out of the Olympics that are, you know, that are examples of this legacy thing. Because if you really want to get the legacy obsession, you go to the Olympics. I mean, the kid that fell today, Vaughn, and I don't know if you saw the skater last night that 10,000 meters, going around the track about 25 times, and his coach told him to switch sides, and he blew the gold medal because of that. and he loses the gold medal. He gets disqualified, gets nothing. You get nothing in Lycan. And the Olympics have that permanent, you know, they kind of scar you that way. You know, you fall or something weird happens, and it's like that's all that's remembered. I mean, when you think about Olympics, you go back, and you think about 76, it's Bruce Jenner, you know, 80, the boycott, you know, 84, we won everything, you know, 88, Seoul, Korea, there was the basketball team lost. I mean, you just remember two or three things from these you know, really kind of overcharged events, but then you get into some of these stories, like we've been talking about the last couple of weeks on the air, and with social media and all the other things backing them up, they just get more and more and more enhanced. So, you know, here's a guy, Dan Jansen, you know, 94 speed skating gold medalist. If you remember back in the Calgary Games in 88, his sister was dying of cancer, leukemia, and he fell. And he was sitting on the ice, you know, had buried his hands, all that stuff. And it's a very, iconoclastic image of the Olympics, right? So this is a story that was on Yahoo today. And it also, of course, it was converted to a Visa commercial later on, that gives goosebumps to even the most jaded among us, says Chris Chase. All right, it's with that intimate knowledge that Jansen wrote an unsolicited email to Canadian figure skater Joni Rochette, who we saw this last night, whose mother suffered a massive heart attack upon arriving in Vancouver and died this week. All right, Rochette made her Vancouver debut Tuesday night. It was in third place after a dazzling display of skating. Tuesday night on the show, Jansen recounted what he wrote to her. He says, I don't know if you can prepare for the emotions you're going to feel out there, but if you can get through it, there are millions of people supporting you out here. And most of all, skate with your mother in your heart. I mean, for him to say it, total strangers, you know, connecting because of the Olympics. And the fact that he got her to understand her living legacy, see. Now, if you see this girl, Joni Rochette, she's a philo. And so is Mr. Jansen. So, again, your living legacy always goes first to relationships. And that's going to be 7 times out of 10, you're going to feel the pull from other people. And that's where your legacy is born, is the fact that you're living in parallel with everybody else. Okay, so then it goes on, Jansen off to meet with her, and you could kind of see parallels here. But for the most part, this is another example of how a living legacy works. This skater would have done her job. She would have been evaluated, judged, whatever. If her mother didn't die, he'd probably never remember her. Now, that's sad but true. But the thing is that this connection she made with Dan Jansen here, that's her legacy now. That's the way you're going to know this person. And these are the things that you can't plan. Like I said, you could be very structural about your life, but you can't plan some of these things. It's amazing. I mean, it's happened a lot. It's happened at boxing events. It's happened at baseball games, with the Super Bowls, where the parent has a heart attack at the event. Amazing stuff. So that happened, I guess, yesterday. And then today, speaking of more of this philodom, we have a dark horse here. We're going to get into the second way your living legacy works, is the frosty relationship between, again, Chris Chase. He's writing his butt off here. The frosty relationship between American skiing stars Lindsey Vonn and Julie Mancuso may have grown a little more contentious Wednesday. Mancuso was flagged off the course during women's giant slalom, and she had to start over again because Lindsey had fallen. And she's mad. So she says, people are having a hard time reaching their potential because it's such a struggle to get attention. She tells Sports Illustrated, you come to the meetings after the race, and it's a bad day if Lindsey didn't do well. A little jealousy. Now, Mancuso is not wired like our friend Lindsey Vonn, who's in the social issue. But and Julia's a good skier, and she's a very competitive skier, and you know she's got her own thing, and she's not getting enough attention. Do you wonder what she'd be wired like? That would be the second way that we go through our living legacy, which is ontosomatic, which is our own story. This is my deal. And it doesn't reference other people. It relies on the narrative you create in your head. This is where all the shrinks and all the self-help bastards get in there and try to rewrite it for you. But ultimately, it's up to you. So Vonn told Reuters she was bummed out by Mancuso's statements. Because, again, she's filed. She's thinking of the relationship. Tensions boiled over Wednesday when Mancuso left Vonn still on the course following her crash. She left at the correct 1 minute start of the was flagged because Vonn had get to clear and the racing conditions were unsafe. Mancuso was taken to the top of the mountain after her aborted run, had to wait for 13 more skiers for her to make her official slalom. By then, the conditions had deteriorated, snow and fog, and Mancuso ended up in 18th place. Again, can't plan it. This is life. Now, Vaughn was bummed, and she's the other one's mad. So Vaughn had taken a turn too fast and hurt her finger, and Mancuso didn't know this. So she tweets, "I was flagged the giant slalom, and that is expletive. Well, now it's time to get that anger and fight for the second round." Okay. Then she takes the tweet down because she doesn't want to get fined. Mancuso does not blame Vaughn. It's not like Lindsay meant to fall, and it's certainly not like Vaughn's fault that she couldn't get herself out of the netting in time. But this incident adds another layer to a complicated relationship between the rivals. They're really friends and all that stuff. But they don't hang out much, according to Mancuso. Oh, boy. So, like I said, this is the jealousy, the ego, the dysfunction that happens in any performance thing. The Olympics highlight it. But that's that other dimension of living legacy. You have your relationships, like the thing we just talked about with Jansen and the skater, that come up over time, that bubble up, that are signature moments for you. And then you have the ones, the way you interpret events, the one inside. That's your living legacy. The story you're telling yourself about your life also affects your ability to deal with the stress that comes on. And that is something you're sharing with everybody all the time in your nonverbal communications with each other. So that's number two. Now, we've covered a lot of stuff here, but, you know, I was making a turn for the worse here. 9:36, again, you want to hop on here, 646-478-4847, and try and go to the top of the hour. I guess we'll last all that long. I'm kind of, like, a little sick of being alone up here. There's absolutely nobody around. It is just, you know, kind of sad. But, As we take a look at things again, I put out a couple of messages this week on the Safe Line. I'm not going to go to the Safe Line until about 9:45, just to see if anybody's out there. But we do have some statements I want to get to and cover, because there's something very significant happening again with the Olympic legacy, and that third element of it, which is emotions. A lot of people don't realize that they're remembered much more by their emotions than their actions. He was an angry son of a bitch. He was a sad bastard. He was a worried motherfucker. Okay? That's how people describe you. They describe you by your temperament. And for the most part, we can't control how they're going to interpret it. You're shy. Some people will think you're snobby. But you're shy. You have no say in it. That living legacy goes out no matter what. Oh, he's not trustworthy. Oh, he's a nasty SOB. And it could be one incident in 1,000. You could have got me on a bad day. Okay? And because of that, that emotional kind of cauldron we're in, we have to deal with the fact that not every road we travel on is going to be paved. Hence the third way, the eco-somatic way. Dealing with our surroundings, taking things as they come, not trying to force nature into any particular form. We just got to roll with the punches. And that one leads to, unfortunately, a lot of tension, let's just say. So we can rely on our relationships, we can rely on our own narrative, or we can rely on our emotional input and output. And when we do that, our systems tend to kind of, you know, they kind of calibrate things more, because we realize a lot of times we're run by those fears, we're run by those things. And if you can get out of the people map, And get out of the individual map, but start looking at things in terms of your environment. Your identity is not locked up in your cells. It's not sitting in your DNA. It's not in your chromosomes. It's nowhere. It is an environmental signal. It is out in the air, running around. And your little proteins have receptors that say, "That's me over there in the corner." And it picks up the signal. Now, if it's able to propagate that signal through your entire nervous system, you have what's called neuroception. Beep, I feel safe. Every 4 seconds, like Christmas tree lights, our brains blink on and off, and we're able to assess if we're in a safe environment or we're not. If we're not, then we have to go into defense, or we have to get the hell out of there. And that sort of approach, avoid, withdraw, and proceed, that kind of oscillation is the rhythm that we live in. Now, we're not aware of it, because we're so in our heads. And so the eco somatic aspect of our being, which is something that I happen to be rooted in. It's what wired me. Feeling causes us to feel either empathy or not so much towards other people. Now, someone that has my particular somatic profile, I'm going to feel it. I'm going to feel the energy coming and going from other people more than I'm going to feel the words and all the other relationships and all the other gobbledygook that doesn't really, you know, say much to me. And because of that, you're going to experience things indirectly more than directly, and that leads to the sort of the erratic rhythm of the eco, where you're sort of on that choppy sea all the time. And you're trying to basically try to navigate through what most people would, you know, if they could, they would avoid it. So let's see if I can find my friend here who's also eco, actually. I had it here yesterday. Oh, there he is. Okay. So, all right. Nobody around. Okay. So without further ado, we're going to take a little siesta here for a second. I'm going to get myself lined up, and we will do a couple things before the top of the hour to get you ready for tomorrow's big Thursday healthcare summit going on in D.C. as Obama tries once again to engage the enemy. So let's see if I can find something to segue me here. Yeah, we'll do a little of that. A little of that.
How about getting off of these antibiotics? How about stopping eating when I'm so low? How about them transparency and dulling care?
I guess what we'll do now is we'll hit the tape line and see what we got. And this is the story here. Let's see if I can go right there first. A little introduction for the tape line. I want to start by getting to the latest from CNN.com on the bipartisan summit on healthcare reform tomorrow. This comes from Deirdre Walsh, congressional producer. And basically the highlights here is the top Senate Democrats say we're not going to start over. The GOP says it's nearly impossible to imagine an agreement. The title is Bickering Continues as Healthcare Summit Nears. White House holding summit on Thursday. House Speaker says they have great optimism. How do you resolve all that? Again, we just talked about emotions, right? We talked about the friction that comes up. So Chris Dodd, who's a complete fraud, key author of the Senate Care bill, said flatly Wednesday that if Republicans continue to demand the Democrats scrap the bill, there's nothing to talk about. If you expect me to start all over, there's really not much point because we're not going to start over. He was the top Democrat they just quoted. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell argued that that's exactly what the Republicans want. Unless they're willing to do that, I think it's nearly impossible to imagine a scenario in which we can reach an agreement. Dolly mackerel. Dodd said Democrats and Republicans could find some common ground, such areas as Republicans push to allow insurers to sell insurance across state lines. See, this is a big thing, this state line thing. Dodd called the GOP proposal a legitimate issue. But the Democrats have a version that's a counterproposal to the legislature. They have it in the bill. House and Senate Democrats participating met with Pelosi to game out their approach for the meeting. Republicans held their own strategy session in McConnell's office. Pelosi said they had great optimism, but she declined to give any specifics. We're talking about substance. I'm going there to talk about substance. We agree that we should have universal access to coverage with affordability for the middle class and accountability for the insurance companies. I just told you it takes 63 frickin' days to get to the doctor's office in Boston. 31 million people are going to be in line behind you. That, to me, is what the subject is about to mark. We can't get enough drugs. We cannot get enough drugs. But Senate Committee Chairman, whatever, Kent Conrad of North Dakota, admitted the Democrats did talk Wednesday morning about using reconciliation. They're going to force this thing through, like, you know, what, through a goose. She said they anticipate that the issue will come up at Thursday's summit. Reconciliation is a process limited to budget-related bills that bypasses the Senate rule of 60 votes, which is a whole bunch of crap. When it is used, only a majority vote will be needed to advance the bill. Dodd said the Democrats don't want to go that route, but we've been forced to consider it as an option, as he wags his finger, and I believe you must consider it. Anyone watch that Toyota guy testify yesterday? Anyway. The issue of health insurance and wealth reform is so important that we can't afford to get lost in the process debate, and we can't do this. McConnell warned that the political consequences will be severe, pointing to the backlash. Ben Nelson from Nebraska, who's trying to cover his butt with Medicare costs. What is he saying here, this guy? Pointing to the backlash over the special deal in the Senate bill for Nebraska's Democrat Senator Ben Nelson to cover the state's Medicare costs. McConnell says, this is McConnell, if they think the American people are mad at them now, they haven't said anything yet. Again, using emotion to communicate a message. That's the living legacy of the ego. What mood do you put me in when I'm around you is your legacy. If you're a calming influence on people, that's what they'll say. If you upset them, that's what they'll say. Do you have any control over it? Not really. Like I said, if you're shy, they might think you're snobby. On Democratic strategy, Cantor said, the end game is clear. Demand support for their approach or go it alone using reconciliation. This partisan tactic, once soundly rejected by Democrats, now appears to be a foregone conclusion. That's a sad statement for bipartisanship and for America. Anyone watch that CPAC thing over the weekend? The disease of progressivism, as our friend over there, Glenn Beck, was talking about? I don't know. Something tells me if the Republicans had the majority all over the place, this thing would have been done. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. Oh, here's a real enforcing. This is a guy that's just so milquetoast, it makes me nuts. Heck so. I'll get to that strategy in a minute. I'm 47 on a Wednesday. It's going to snow. Pointed out this week that reconciliation has been used more than 20 times since 1981 by both parties. They haven't invented something new. Conrad said he expected the president to make opening remarks, followed by opening statements from the Republicans and Democrats. He also said the Democrats plan to divide who will take the lead in four subject areas, controlling costs, insurance reforms, reducing the deficit, and expanding coverage. And I just told you the line at the doctor's office is 63 days long. Silliness. I think the Canadians just beat the Russians. I think it's over, yep. It's over. It's over in Vancouver. The Russians are gone. The Canadians advance. Americans won today, by the way, so we have that. I should do that here. Let's see. We'll break in. Da, 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 da. Here we go. Play. Yep, there's old Crosby walking off. Let's see if we get a little sound here from Vancouver. Got two more games coming up tonight if you're a hockey fan. I'll be checking out early to go watch those. Ovechkin's out of the Olympics after his colossal hit on Sunday on Jager. I am digging this. All right, the Canadians advance. Play the winner of Sweden and Slovakia playing later. We got Finland and Czech Republic coming up with Jager, Woozy, coming out there. 7-3. Nobody scored in the third period. Wow. Yeah, they broke out early. They had a 3-0 lead early, and the Canadians are just basking in this. They really got their heads beat in as a team in the Olympics. They won, 12 medals at the whole Olympics, and we've got like 20 something. So anyway, there's your overview of what's going to happen down in Washington tomorrow. And again, using emotion to communicate your legacy. That's the third way. The fourth way is through structure, right? And things like technology, which brings me to my Sapevine comment tonight. Coming to you, like I said, from an eco, like I told you. He's wired like me, so he deals with emotions as well. You'll see that in the text here for a second. But I put it to him. I said, Unity, this is his name. I said, Unity, tell me how you feel about tomorrow's little face-off there in Washington, D.C., and what does it mean for you? He's the one of the co-founders of the website, OrganizeWisdom.com. So I'll give you his 2 cents here. He said he's paid great attention to the healthcare debate over the past year. Our hope is that some sort of new healthcare bill passes, even if it is an incremental progress, so that more people have access to affordable healthcare. Ultimately, though, long ago he decided to stop worrying about the ebbs and flows of healthcare politics and focus on something that will have a great impact on his healthcare and more meaning, educating people about prevention, health in general, and giving them tools and resources to put them in charge of their own health care. Now, look at that sentence there. Look at Unity's statement here. Unity Stokes from OrganizedWisdom.com. All right? His agenda is to stop focusing on the politics and have a great impact on health care by doing things that have more meaning, like educating people about prevention, what's health in general. No one's ever defined that definitively. Giving people tools and resources to put them in charge of their own health care. And our buddies are focusing on what? Again, 63 days in the waiting room. They're focusing on controlling costs, insurance reform, reducing the deficit, and expanding coverage. You want to talk about a gap in agendas? This is where we are, and that's where they are. All right, so that's his basic statement. Then he says he believes that there should be major reform. He just doesn't think it's prudent to outsource taking charge of your own care, which is why he's an advocate for consumer control. We haven't talked about the consumers, only access insurance and costs. The consumers are out there. We'll all be better off if more of us start taking care of our own health, a little first-person authority, our diet, which is another thing, our exercise regimen, which is another thing, and demanding change in the ways we can all control at the local and personal level. Sounds like somebody should be reading Life, Inc. by Douglas Rushkoff, getting everything back down to the local level where you get to kitchen table wisdom. And they can't corporatize it, and they can't extract it, and they can't get at you anymore. Their little claws can't get at you anymore. The more you stay a number, the more you stay in that system, the more you get labeled and moved around, and you're just absolutely just a number in a chart. You move around the x-ray chart, and the insurance companies, you're going to the table tomorrow, with insurance companies, drug companies, lobbyists, and a bunch of thieves are going to decide how healthy you're going to be. So Unity continues, the bottom line is that even if a healthcare bill passes, it may have an incremental benefit on an aggregate level, but healthcare is entirely personal. It comes down to the individual needing to take control and responsibility of their own healthcare. Sounds onto to me, even though he's eco. But this is where he makes this turn for the fourth way to deal with your living legacy. In addition to people needing to take control of their own care first and foremost, Unity believes the second way we need to start seeing real progress with the American healthcare system is not when the bill passes or new regulation comes out. It will be via entrepreneurial innovation, hopefully led by consumers demanding more control. We already see hundreds of new startups designing products and services to help people better manage their own health. I personally, Unity, manages his own electronic healthcare records. He won't go to no doctor waiting 63 days who won't communicate with him through email or schedule appointments online. And I do that all the time. Especially when Earthlink was down this afternoon, that was a real fun thing. He won't work with health practitioners who won't give him healthcare records in PDF or digital format. I do that all the time. And you could join our Doctor on Demand program because we have a new flight leaving on Monday. For 1 month, I take care of you, get you through, relief and recovery, give you guys all the things you need to get healthy. It costs you $300. That's $10 a day. But guess what? The strategies stick. to your ribs. So check it out on the website, somerspace.org. That's our Doctor on Demand program. You get access to me through the web, no waiting, no 63 days in the waiting room. You get your information. You get a different strategy each week so you can basically build your own biofeedback system, build your own healthcare system through the somatic awareness I provide on the site. I continue now with Unity's comments here. So he won't work with the healthcare practitioners and won't give them the records in PDF form. He finds it's less expensive when he deals with dentists and prescriptions for healthcare services online. He tracks many of his biometrics using his iPhone, the apps. He's had his DNA scanned by a website called 23andme.com. Check that out, 23andme.com, to look for early ways to prevent future disease and conditions. This gets into epigenetics, something we talked about on the show a number of times. He's educated himself on food and diet. All those things he's doing on his own as a consumer. He's able to do it. He's empowered to do it on his own. He doesn't need permission from the system. We're looking for permission for everything. There are ways to take control of your own health now and not depend on whether the health care bill passes or not. Why wait for these bastards? They don't know what health is. If you sat all these senators down, who their brains are rotting, as David Goodman says, stick them all on the MRI scan and see what how much their frontal lobes are rotting. Half these guys couldn't decide where to cross the street if it's green or red. All right? And I'm calling them out. Let's see a 100 brains. I'm going to see a 100 brain MRI. Stick them up there on the screen. Then they can make decisions. Other than that, they're just toadies. They're not going to help you. They help themselves. They're all campaigning. They're all, look at the way they were shucking and jiving in that thing, that eco little war they had going on there. Ooh, we're mad. And we're going to remember this Congress as the Congress that did nothing but complain, by the way. All right, Unity continues here. There are ways I'm able to save time and money through doing this. There are ways I'm able to better ensure I'm healthy long-term. I'm hopefully keeping my health care costs down, and that's going to help in the community as well. It's one less safe in the waiting room because he's going to do it himself. To sum it up, I hope at least some incremental health bill passes. He's not holding his breath. He's taking charge of his own health. He's an entrepreneur, and he supports others who are trying to fix the system. This is the exo comment I'm going to get to at a time via innovation. Now, last week we had on Eric Wallman from Socialnomics talking about how social media is changing the landscape of the way we communicate, much more on the philo relationship side. Here, Unity's saying we need to invest in the infrastructure of the web as a support and a parallel system that bypasses all the crap that goes on the ground that waits for permission. Nothing on the web waits for permission. You can access anything you want up there and take responsibility. So he's combining that narrative of I'm doing for myself, the Onto one, I'm referencing myself, I'm going to do for myself, with the exosomatic awareness that there's another structure here that gives me answers. Like I said, I got a Doctor on Demand program. Anybody could sign up. $300, a couple of questions. We get going. It's $10 a day, and each week you're going to get something that is invaluable to your long-term health and get you out of this, you know, diagnose me, test me, why don't you arrest me crap. Their system is corrupting. It corrupts you. I told you about the swine flu stuff. I told you about the way the vaccines are being managed. They have no way to organize it anymore. It's ineffective, number one, and now it's inefficient, number two. Let's reform it. No, let's admit it doesn't work. Let's cut a lot of ties on this. Let's get the insurance companies out of the equation. All right, now when you're dealing with emergency procedures and you're dealing with things that are much more on the traumatic side, sure, but they don't know how to manage a chronic illness that lasts longer than 3 weeks. They admit it. And now with the doctors working less hours, look at this equation. The doctors are working less hours. They're going to get more. They're going to at least get 31 million people more insurance to give more access. They're already waiting 2 months to get the primary care person to listen to them, who's not there as many hours as he used to be. The younger doctors are practicing less than the older doctors. I mean, this is mass hysteria. You know? Elvis, what the hell? We covered all this. What do you think?
What the fuck was he talking about?
That's right. So, to sum it all up, guys, I mean, that basically is the stance you got to take going into this thing tomorrow. And we're dealing with legacy tonight. What is your personal legacy going to be? You go around the horn and you look at it. What are my relationships saying to me right now? Are my relationships saying to me I'm going forward? I feel light in my body. I feel like I can carry this path. I can stay with my passions, or I'm feeling kind of cloudy there. That's one stop on the train. I'm telling you, it's 70% of the stops on the train are made on that relationship level. Relationships will wear you down and rust your soul if you're not aligned with them properly on a legacy level, because they are, it's a two-way street there. Your legacy and theirs, right? Then there's the narrative one in your head. What are you telling yourself about stuff? And like you hear Unity, he's taking the first person authority, which of course brings responsibility, brings independence, brings a lot more choice. So that's the second one. Third one, emotions. If you don't check them, then basically you're going to have to wreck them, because they're going to run your life. Instead of you being aware that angry gets you, you don't get angry. Angry gets you. Now, on our site, on somerspace.org, as he almost gags on himself here, on somerspace.org, you can click and join the OVI list, which is of vital interest, and that takes you to our coherence calendar, which gives you a strategy every lunar phase of the year. This week, we are in an Anto mode, so we're going to rely more on that narrative in our head for our coherence, all the way up to the full moon on Sunday. And then, guess what? Next week, it's emotions. And the empathy comes up. So like I said, the high and the low of the coherence, the zig and the zag moving through from week to week, face to face with the moons, from month to month. Every month has every lunar cycle has a message for us. Every season has a message for us. Coming up on changing seasons next month, we got the clocks changing. All those rhythms are covered on the coherence calendar, on our winter calendar going into spring. You can check that out for free by going and looking at the OVI, which is my woo letter. Comes out every Sunday. So there's another resource. Again, using the technology to get information out. Now, a lot of stuff I've been saying has been probably on deaf ears for the most part, because you guys are all got your heels dug in, using the over-the-counter stuff, and if you're still triggered by the swine fear and all that stuff, I can't help you there. I can't help you there. The information's right there in front of you. Now, most of you resisted it. Most of you blew it off, which is good. I hope that as we go forward, I mean, I don't say hope very often, but I hope as we go forward with this and the pressure mounts from the economy, from the healthcare stuff, from a lot of the political things that go back and forth, and there's so much hate out there right now, it's not even funny. Wait till the summer, that's all I can say. When you're dealing with things that are part of the psyche, part of the legacy, I told you before, most of this stuff, that family legacy, countries have legacies. Okay, the American history is in your bones. All right, it's there. It's sort of a froth that you have to overcome, and it's very difficult to do that when you don't have a clear context of what you are, not who you are. Who you are is a story. Better be a good one, a damn good one. Write a good story. Be a hero. But what you are is a soma. You are a self, and like I said, define self by you and everyone you interact with surroundings. With an environment where your identity comes from. And if you don't tune into those things and you don't see how those things all fit together, life gets pretty cloudy pretty quick, and it sucks. And you get stuck in other people's maps. OPM. That's as simple as it gets, guys. You know, I did an hour show tonight. I didn't talk to anybody but you, and I think we did a good job. You know why? Because I think I got my truth out there. I feel light inside. I feel renewed. So, you know what? I'm gonna cut it short. I'm going to go watch some hockey, and you guys can then deal with me next week, if you can. I'll be on there at 9 o'clock on Wednesday night as we usher in March, and see if it comes in like a lion or it comes in like a lamb. And if you have something to say to me in between, you can always email me at nakedsoma@gmail.com or get on the e-list at somaspace.org, and there's about three or four ways to get in there for free now. You can always follow me on Facebook, whatever you want to do. Follow me on Twitter at SomaBoy. So that's it. I, like I said, I hope you understood how to take this little inventory of your legacy and understand how things all fit together. So I'm going to let little Billy Joel play us out here. I think I did this last time, though. I kind of like this song. Kind of fits everything. So hopefully you enjoy the end of the Olympics and get to the storm this week. And once again, if you have any specific questions for me, fastest way to get me is email. And that's nakedsoma@gmail.com, nakedsoma@gmail.com. This Sunday night, I will be making an appearance on New York Baseball Digest on Mike Silva's show. So you can check that out too. Again, you can get all the details at newyorkbaseballdigest.com. Sunday night between 7 and 9, I'll probably be on closer to the 9 o'clock hour for about 15 minutes. talking about my Mets and those lousy, rotten, stinking Yankees and the injuries as spring training clicks in and how you can use a little of the somatic awareness I talk about here to understand the dynamics of how athletes deal with injuries over time. We're going to get into that a little bit. Let me just take one last check. No, nobody's there. I'm getting out. All right, let's see. I left the door open for John Murray, but he's flaking out on me again to do a tournament this week. Well, maybe we'll hear from him before the snow melts. So let's see if we can get a little Billy to play us out, and then we'll take an early exit to check out the next hockey game here. This is cool stuff. All right. Let's see. Connecting to media. From the album 12 Gardens Live. I give you a little Billy Joel to just take into consideration as you head out the door tomorrow. Shovel that snow one more time here on the East Coast. This is Dr. Mark saying thank you very much for this time and your space. Be yourself and be well.
1, 2, 3, 4.
USA! USA! Drive the lights, Zippins.